So welcome. My name is Teemu Tapanala. I work as a lead Microsoft developer at a company called Magin. We do TV streaming. Today, I'm going to talk about building logical mobile apps backed by an API. Why this kind of like horrible monster to the topic name? Because Microsoft has renamed all of their new services, and I wanted to include all of them in the topic. Because I really, really don't like these namings. I think it's one of the most confusing things currently. And another thing is that they change like monthly. So they were mobile services, now they're mobile apps, which is another like very, very confusing. How many have used Azure App Services, the new ones? How many have used the old ones? Way more hands. The funny thing is that most of them just got a new name. Most of them are still the same old services. So we have four different services which combined create Azure App Service, which is more like you can think that as a platform. So we have a web apps. That was before called Azure Websites. So the web apps is basically just a way to host your website. It can either be an API or it can be a more front-facing website, and it's running top of ease. Then you have mobile apps. Mobile apps was before called mobile services, and that's mainly to host a backend for your mobile needs, be it Android, iOS, HTML5, or Windows. Then we have something called logic apps. How many here have used logic apps? How many like it? Let's not go there yet. So logic apps is something that I think that that's the one of the things that will be the greatest of all of those four, but very much like it will be. It is not yet there. No way. Then we have API apps. So API apps is currently, I would say, out of all of these four, like among the best. It's one of the best ways to build APIs, and if you have ever built APIs, you know that it's not really that hard to get started, but there is few key things that make it pretty hard, and the API apps is trying to answer all of those. So we are today going to focus mostly on API apps, but cover all of them except the logic apps. A little bit like, what does it mean that they all belong together? So they're all running on app service platform, and all of them are based on web apps. So if you're running a mobile apps, you have all the features that you have on a web apps. If you're running an API app, you have all the features of web apps. So for example, like what kind of features you have on web apps? You have scaling, you have geo-routing, you have traffic routing, which sound very similar, but are like totally two different things. You have deployment slots, so you can deploy from GitHub or from Visual Studio or right from your Visual Studio Online. And then you have logic apps. And the idea is to tell that logic apps is totally separate one. Logic apps is going its own way, and it's not really based on these other technologies. And another key thing is that the features that come on API apps or mobile apps are not the same. So in the future, I think that they will start to evolve even more, like have more features that are more unique on a mobile and also on API. So the web apps is more like a platform, and these API and mobile are just like very special cases of a web app. So let's take an example of scenario. How many have used the to-do item example on mobile services? How many have done that? All right. So the idea is that you can do to-do items. And what we are going to today do is that we have a Windows 8 application, which will send the data to a mobile service. So the first icon from left, these all icons are very clear, of course, because everyone sees this daily, right? So the first icon on the left is a mobile app. The second one is API app, and the third one is a Salesforce. And especially this means Salesforce Cloud, because everyone is now using the cloud version, right? one of the things is that these days, a lot of people, when they're building backends, they build one service. And that one service is responsible for everything. So you have one service which you call, and that will then call the APIs of Salesforce, APIs of Facebook, APIs of Twitter, or whatever you have. And that one service will be pretty large. So one of the big things with this whole app service platform is the idea that start you getting thinking about microservices. So how many now know what microservices means? Cool. Because I would still not agree that I know exactly what microservices means, because whenever you explain what it really means, it's totally different. Because everyone has a little bit like different ideas. What does it mean to have a microservice? What kind of like level of abstraction you're really talking about? What kind of environments are you talking about? So today we are going to talk about microservices in terms of app services. So in this kind of scenario, you could directly call the Salesforce from the mobile services. And sorry for my slides living its own life. Something happened to my computer. Must be the Swedish side. So the idea is that in a normal architecture, your mobile service would directly talk to the Salesforce. But we don't want that. Because if we do that linking, then whenever we want to do any changes to our Salesforce, let's say that we want to start using a new instance of a Salesforce, we want to change the credentials, we want to do these kind of changes, it would mean that we need to deploy a new version of the mobile services. Even though we are not really like touching anything in the mobile service, we are just touching the link between that and the Salesforce. So that's why we have something between them called API app. And we're today going to talk a lot about like why I think this kind of architecture really makes sense. So let's get started. We are just going to start by going to the portal. I'm using the preview portal. And we are going to start right from scratch and hope everything goes nicely. If it doesn't, we will go to the backup solution. So we are creating a new mobile application. When you're creating a new mobile application, one of the things that you will notice is that it calls itself web app here, even if you're creating a mobile app. Why is that? Because the mobile app is still hosted by a web app. So lots of terms are there together. So I will now call this a CloudBurst demo. And let's see, it's still available. Write subscription. And then we are creating a new resource group called CloudBurst demo. And we are creating a new service plan. This is very important about the service plan. The idea of the app service is that when you're hosting your app service, the app service should be located inside of one service plan. Because whenever you scale it, everything inside of that service plan will get scaled. So most of the scenarios, you want to keep everything that's tied together inside of one service plan. But we will get back to this, especially when we're talking about pricing, because one of the biggest reasons why you want to keep them together is related to the pricing. So now we're creating a new one. And we are going to name it as a CloudBurst demo. And we are going to host it in West Europe. And we are just keeping it to standard. And then we are creating it. So the reason why you want to have everything there is mostly about the pricing, but it's also about scaling. When you're doing microservice, in this scenario, it means a lot that you're splitting your code between different API service, API apps. And when you're splitting them between different API apps, if you host them in different resource plans, that means that the request needs to go outside of the request plan to go outside the resource plan to go and call it. And that will add more delay. So that's why it's very important that you keep all of them inside of the one resource plan. And yeah, this is a new concept. And yeah, it's very confusing, I think, at the start. But it gets easier once you start really doing it. And there is also like, why is there this kind of like grouping now in Azure, it's very much to do that currently. The only way, only good way to deploy them is through the portal or directly from Visual Studio. But I think in the future, it will be also deployed with the art, because there is no really like other way to deploy them as they grow more and more complex. And because there's also like very big parts of the API apps that will also start to be like really, really complex. And they already have something called like template config, which currently is not in use, but it looks very much like art config file. So I think that's the new feature that will be coming pretty soon. But now we have our nice environment. What we're just going to do is define a data holder for this project. And we are just going to create a new SQL database. By default, there is more providers than only SQL. You can also use Mongo or CouchDB to provide a database to your cloud services, sorry, mobile services. But today we're just going to use SQL one. Yes. And the new blades is pretty nice. It like starts to go more and more to the right until you reach the end, and then it goes back again. And then of course the password. It's very hard to write it twice while like you're speaking. Yes, I succeeded. Okay. No. Now, finally, okay. And I think this is one of the like strangest features on our current Azure portal. Like, nothing is happening currently. But on the left side, we see nice indication that Azure is currently thinking and it's 10% done. And hopefully it will be very like complete soon. But while we're like waiting that, we can slowly start with the project. So by default, it has multiple different client templates straight away. This time we're just going to use the default Windows project. Okay. And there was error creating the database. So let me download these ones first and then try again. So, okay. One of the things is that while I downloaded it, I got two separate projects. The idea is that currently to create a backend on top of mobile services, it's supported by two different languages. Node.js support, which came, I think, 3 days ago. So that's still like very preview. I would say that it comes like pretty stable in like a few months. And then we have the .NET backend implementation, which has been already used for a longer time. Now I will just go and extract these folders. That's my client. And then I have my backend. No, let's just ask. One of the nice things is that if you have both of the client and a backend in your local Visual Studio, it makes it very, very easy to debug them, even if you're running them locally. So even if they are two separate files, you can just add easily the backend into the same project. So then it's easier to manage them together. So we are running the runtime. And now don't ask me. All right. And we are just going to deploy this. And currently, this is, I think, like one of the interesting things is like why it's important to know which one is running which. Currently, when you like select publishing target, there is nothing called mobile services. The reason is being that mobile services is found under Microsoft Azure Web Apps. So when you're selecting the web apps, your existing cloud like mobile apps will be shown in the same list. I think it's very interesting why the API apps is still separate button, even though they're like running same level. But this is one of those things that, because this is still pretty new, that they are very much like evolving. And depending how many subscriptions and how large your subscriptions are, this might sometimes take a long while. So CloudBurst demo. And then we are just publishing this one. While this is publishing, it will only take a short while. After it's done, the publishing, it will open you a browser, which will show you a very nice smiley if everything went well. If something didn't go well, the smiley doesn't look that nice, which is the only indicator that you will get if something went wrong. So currently, we're not seeing nice smiley. Let's look. And all of the errors are pointing that my NuGet package restore didn't complete. So one of the interesting things is that the idea is that you can run this locally. So you should be able to just build this locally and everything should work. This is always fun. Yeah, currently my NuGet references are not being updated. All the fun using the latest packages. Sometimes when this happens, the easiest way to fix it is just to install a new NuGet package, and normally that will fix it. If it doesn't, then we will switch to a backup project. Yes, I accept. So how many are using the new Visual Studio 2015? Great. How many had problems with NuGet? I had lots. But good thing is that they are really improving, I would say, daily. And it's still complaining about something. Good idea. Rebuild failed. So I will give it one more build. If it doesn't work, then we will reload already existing solution. Yes. So CloudBurst backup. So the problem is the NuGet packages. What's wrong with them? I have no idea. Because they clearly are on there and NuGet is saying that they have been restored. So no idea. Strange stuff. But I was kind of expecting that nothing goes right, so I have like different solution that has the backend already deployed. So this is the exactly same project, except now that there is one more project file, something called CloudBurst Salesforce API. This is an API app service that I have created. I'm not going to go through that very much. Basically, what it does is that it has one request that it takes in, and then it will talk to Salesforce. So this is a very basic ASP.NET MVC application. This is directly from the template, and it has only one function, which is called post, and it's called Salesforce case controller, and then it will do authentication to the Salesforce, and then it will take whatever came as a parameter and post that in the Salesforce. And the whole idea is that when you have done this, you can just start talking to the Salesforce. How this is done, we are not going to go that one any further. But now we're going to go how this is being deployed. So once you have created API App Service, you can deploy it to an Azure API apps. And one of the things is that especially this deployment tool is still in a preview phase. So this time, we're going to create a new one. And that one. And this is very important that you know what app service plan you're using. So we are using CloudBurst Demo, and our resource group is correct. And then this is one of the most important things. What is the access level of your API? The idea is that when you're creating API, you have three levels of access. One is available to anyone. That means anyone can call the API. There is no authentication. There is no blocking of anyone. Anyone can make calls. Second level is public authenticated access. That sounds pretty like what? What it really means is that all the users will be authenticated by Azure AD, and then they can access this one. And then the third one, available only to other APIs in this resource group. In other documentation, it's called internal. So that means only services inside of this resource group can call it. Because normally, when you do these microservices, you don't want to worry about the security of all of them. If you're, let's say, you're creating 25 of them, you don't want to start all of them by checking, like, is this call coming from my service or is this coming from internet? Is this call trying to attack me or is this call trying to do its job? You don't want to start that. So it's very easy that you have few APIs that are public facing, and then all the other APIs are just for internal consumption. That means that there is no way to call it from external sources, which makes it pretty safe. Of course, there is the third option, which is that you have Azure AD authentication to protect them. But for demo purposes, we are going to do it this available to anyone. And now we're going to say OK. This is pretty interesting because I think this is one of the only creations that has this kind of flow. So the idea is that when you click OK, it's gone. The whole menu, but down here, it's now starting to create the resource in Azure. And when it's done, you need to go again and do the publishing. So I think everything else kind of like just makes you wait for a long time. This is a very nice process because now it's doing it on the background and you can still keep using Visual Studio. So Visual Studio is not blocked while Azure Portal is creating its resources, which I think, like, I hope everything will go this way. Because then that means that once you start like the execution of creation of your environment, it means that you can still work and be effective instead of just looking at the bar and saying like, yay, the spinner is nice. I mean, they have a nice spinners. There is nothing wrong with them. But still looking at them for 5 minutes, which sometimes is the amount of time it takes, is not really that fun. Of course, it's always a good excuse to go for a coffee break. So yes, we are still seeing the spinner. It's always nice. Like whenever you're doing presentations, they're always at least a double of the length. I don't know why. But yes, it's still doing it. But yes, let's go back to slides for a while it's deploying. How many know Swagger? It's not good there yet. How many think that your APIs that you're currently using are documented the best way ever and they are very easy to use? All right. Swagger is one of the frameworks trying to solve this problem called documentation of APIs and how, like, most of all, like how to produce the documentation. And then I think one of the important things, how to consume the documentation. Because the idea with Swagger is not that I produce a documentation, then someone reads it and writes code based on my documentation. Because why would I put lots of effort to write the documentation of my API if someone is just going to read it and then produce an implementation of it based on my documentation? Like, why wouldn't I just make the right away the implementation of my API directly for that platform. Swagger was the choice that Microsoft made. I think there is currently like one other standard, which is pretty popular, but Swagger has kind of won this game. So it's a standard to make an APIs for two things, for humans and for applications. So it's a computer-readable format, and it's also human-readable format when you do use something called Swagger UI, which creates a very nice UI on top of the Swagger documentation. Azure APIs, by default, have Swagger enabled. But by default, they don't have Azure UI enabled. You need to uncomment three lines of code to enable it, so it's pretty much there. And the whole reason why Logic Apps will be amazing and why I believe that they have a huge future is all about Swagger. Because Swagger is the way that you describe your APIs, and because of that, it will be super easy to consume them using the Logic Apps. Also, it will make it super easy to consume them whatever apps you're making. Like, API consumption has never been this easy before, I would say. It works in 90% of the cases, 10% that it doesn't work. Most likely, your API is either way too complex or you're hitting one of those corner cases. There is always corner cases. Let's look at like how the Swagger looks like. And now hopefully my deployment. So now my resource is existing, and now I will do the publishing process again to really deploy it. So the first like few minutes waiting was all about like creating the service into Azure, and now we're deploying our installation. All right. And we are done almost soon. And after this is done, I will show you what this will look like. This will look like. Oh, come on. Yes, now it's done. So whenever the deployment is done, it will open your browser into it. If your resource is something that is only for internal consumption, this will give you a nice error that says internal usage only. But because I said that anyone can use it, now we can access it. And the way to access the Swagger is, of course, just to do /Swagger. So this is called Swagger UI. This is very basic HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript that's producing it. And now we can see all of our APIs. So we had only one method called post. And now we can see the URL for that is /API/Salesforce case, and you need to do a post request. Now when we open it, we see that because of the coding, depending on how much metadata you have inputted, this will right away tell you all the possible HTTP response codes, all the possible error scenarios, and you can write very nice also descriptions here. But even if you don't do anything, which I haven't done, it already looks pretty good. You first of all know that what you are supposed to send, and it will show you like a model schema of like what kind of parameters are you supposed to send. And when you click this, it will just copy-paste here. And we will just very quickly look into this. So this is the way that all the parameters are brought into this one. Of course, having something like an ID that takes string in might not be like mind-blowing. But knowing that all of these are attributes that you can use, and you know what kind of values they take in. Are they Booleans? Are they integers? Or are they strings? Because one of the things is like, how many have APIs to take IDs as integers? One of the big debates always is like, should APIs take IDs as integers? Most of the APIs take IDs as strings because integers will overflow at some point. Of course, that's a very debatable, like, will you ever reach that point? But still, like, it's one of those things. So it's very good to know, are your IDs strings or integers, which this answers you right away. And then, of course, you can try it. Like, you can try it right away from here. And now we're not going to fill all of them. So we're just going to use something called subject and description. And if you have a huge API like this one, of course, having all the fields is nice, but does it really tell you how to use it? Not really, but it will make it super simple to test it. So test subject, and then my description. And then you can just say, try it out. The nice thing is that this is really making a request against the API app. This is not like a mock or something. This will make a real request. You can see here what is the URL that we're calling, what is the response body, code, and all the headers that are coming back. So you can see the whole response, and you can see everything that we sent there. And now, just to show you, we're going to Salesforce. How many are familiar with the Salesforce? All right, a few hands. This is the Salesforce cloud solution. I like to use it on demos because it has pretty complex API. It has lots of fields. And if I would have to map it myself, it would take me a long, long time. So that's why it's a very, very nice scenario that you can do this. And now we can see that by just using the API, we can create new cases to our Salesforce. So let's send a new one. So test subject, new one. And then we can just try it out. And then we refresh the page. And there we have it. So this is more about like how it's way easier to read it as a human. And now we'll go very more interesting scenario, which is about how to consume it as an application. I will try this on the old project. Because of the NuGet problems, this might not work. So then we will go back to the other one. When you right-click your projects, if you have the latest Visual Studio 2015, and you go to add, depending on how much stuff you have installed, this list might be long. There is something called Azure API App Client. What you can do with this is that you can do two things. First, you can download a Swagger file from a resource that exists in your Azure subscription. Or if you are using something external, you can just give the Swagger file into this solution. So you can just download someone's Swagger file and then just take it here. For example, I think Twilio, Salesforce, I think Facebook also, all of them have Swagger files of their APIs. So you could just like put the API here, eat the Swagger file, and it would work. But we happen to have our own. So CloudBurst Salesforce API. And then you can give it a namespace. We're not going to do that. We're just saying OK. And now, if demo codes are with us, it will download all the necessary files. So what it will now do is that, first of all, it will read the Swagger file. Then it will make all the necessary models into my application. And then it will add all the necessary codes. One of the nice things is that if you're using it against Azure API, it will also add all the necessary calls to do the authentication. But because ours is public, it will not do the authentication part. But it added here a folder called CloudBurst Salesforce API, which was the name of my API app, which under it adds lots of different kind of class names. It will create a client for it. So by default, it will create you a client, which you can right away use to make the calls. And the reason why it creates its own client is that they have packaged lots of different kind of like ready-made stuff to make it easier to consume the Acer API app. But another thing that they haven't done is that this is very like extensible. It's made so that you're supposed to overwrite the parts that you don't like or replace most of it. But the code generation of this is one of the best I've seen on Microsoft consumption side. If you have ever used like OData consumer before to add a service reference and then using those kind of data types, how many have done that? Few. How many like the data stuff that it created? One, two. Personally, I think that most of the time it was okay, but at the same time, it was very, very limiting. It was expecting you to only do this thing, and if you went outside of that, you had to code it yourself. This is expecting you to either take it like this, extend it, or replace it. So it's more like the extension part that makes it like really, really flexible. But today we're just going to code the controllers. And now this will look really interesting. So yeah, we're going to the another one. So we see it. So the whole code to consume the API after we have done it looks exactly like this. Now I will make it a little bit larger. So the whole idea is that the consumption of the APIs should be more like way, way easier. So everything I had to do to call my API app is just say, my API is the name of my API, whatever it was, and it will automatically create me the client. And then I will just say what operation I want to call, and it only had one post operation, and then pass along the parameter. And the whole, like, what kind of parameters does it take in? Because we had this complex case model, it will automatically package that into this model, so you don't need to worry about anything. And you have very nice intelligence here. So if you were wondering, like, was there something like, who's the account ID, you can just see all of them and you can see the types of them. So this is what makes this like very simple. I really like Swagger. So why app services? Why are we doing app services? Why we are not doing Service Fabric or cloud services straight away or worker roles or these kind of things? The whole idea is that it enables you to build solutions very quickly and ship them with confidence. So when you use any of the app services, you know what you're getting. Because you're getting the whole same level of monitoring diagnostics as you get from the websites. And at the same time, you're getting everything that's coming with the platform. So the platform is not standing still. Like, if you now make your solution using Azure web apps, if you keep using it, and 1 year after you have done your code, you go and look in your portal, you probably have a lot of new features that you didn't have when you make the solution. Your solution is still working the same, it's still working nicely, but now you have new features, which make it very like interesting that instead of you constantly updating it, to make it fresh, it might just be easy that you code it once, 2 years later you start it and you see like, oh yeah, now I can make this nice feature because Microsoft added it into the platform. One of these scenarios which is coming to the API apps is that it's pretty simple to create one API app service yourself and deploy it. But what happens when you have more complex scenarios with API apps? Let's say that your API apps depends on Elasticsearch. So it expects you to have a deployment, let's say, 5 machines in a cluster where you have Elasticsearch installed with this kind of configuration. Then it gets way more harder. That's where the new platform will come. It's not there currently, but there will be. So you can say that this will depend. This has a dependency into this kind of installation. So if someone, for example, have made this Elasticsearch art model and published it on the marketplace, you can say that you need to have this installed, and then I will start using that one. So you can make this kind of dependencies on your API apps. And also, there will be a marketplace for API apps. So someone can sell you an API for basically anything. Because they're Swagger documented, they're very easy to consume, and they're very easy to get started. And you can deploy it to your own Azure service. Then security and management. Management is either from the portal, PowerShell, or any other tools that you're currently using to manage your current solutions. There is nothing special between managing your API compared to the websites, compared to the mobile app. Security is handled either by just giving the internal access or putting Azure Active Directory in front of this all. The whole idea is that if you put Azure Active Directory, it will go over the whole resource group. So that's why we were like talking about the resource group pretty much on the start, is that the resource group will define the scaling, but it will also define the authentication. So now, one of my favorite things that this enables. How many have done A/B testing? All right. One of the nice things is that Azure websites enable you to do an A/B testing pretty easily. So in scenario, we currently have all of our traffic is going through A, and now we're going to do a scenario where we can handle and say that this will go to the B. How many know about deployment slots? All right. So let's not go ahead yet. So I was planning to do a deployment, but because everything is not working that well, we're going to look at a backup solution. So we have here API app. When you enter into API app, which is like, I think this is more about the UI, you can see that it has a resource group, it has a status, it has a location, subscription, and then it has something called API app host, and then it has a gateway. The gateway is something that's generated by Azure itself, and that will handle the authentication. Whatever you do, don't go and deploy the gateway again. Currently, if you do anything to the gateway, it's very, very easy to mess it up. So that's why like it's very confusing, because if you click the gateway, it looks very similar to the API app host. But what we are interested in is the API app host. So this is a normal website behind everything, and it has deployment slots. And we have defined currently three different slots for us. So we have the main slot, what we call production. Then we have slot called one and slot called two. And another thing is that we have enabled GitHub integration into this deployment. So whenever you do a deployment on a GitHub, it will deploy a new version. But the interesting thing is that if you deploy to the master, it will deploy that to the production. If you deploy to branch called one, it will deploy here to the number one. And if you deploy to the branch number two, it will deploy to the two. And now what you can do is go to something called traffic routing and say that whenever people try to reach my API app, let's say that I want 40% go to number one, and then we want to have 10% going to number two. So now, if we have 10 users calling our API, even though they're using the exactly same URL to call the API, they will get different results. So now if you have a very nice like microservice scenario, you can start switching the APIs inside of it. And you don't even need to tell anybody because you can just use like very small percentage of all of the calls and drive it to the new version. So let's say that you're now switching from Salesforce to another CRM. Who feel confident enough that it will go right with the first try? All right. So now if you would have this kind of scenario, you could say that 5% of all of the calls will go to this new instance. And the new instance, what it would do, then it would like do first to the Salesforce and then to the new system. But because you're not sure, like, can the new system handle the load, you're only doing it with 5% of all of the usage. And you don't even need to tell this anybody because all the other people are just calling the microservice. You're not disturbing your main service because you're just routing a little bit of traffic into this new service. So with this, you can start switching pieces of your backend very, very quickly and very rapidly without even like having any kind of problems. And then you can do very complex scenarios like when you deploy a new version of an API, we start by having like a 5% and then we increase it by 10% every hour. But if we see lots of errors, then we will just swap it back into the old one and all these kind of scenarios. So together with this AP testing, we can do lots of interesting scenarios with the microservices and the API app. And the whole thing is like the whole same AP testing, all the features, they all come from the web apps. So they're all available also on the mobile apps. So you can start switching pieces however you want. Then let's go to the most important slide now. Pricing. So currently, I don't have the prices here because they a little bit depend on things, but I'm more interested on the limits. So the interesting thing is like, so free, first of all, is only meant for development. Or if you're running your personal deployment or your personal stuff, don't ever run production on free. You will run into problems. The free is not capable of handling almost anything. Shared means that it's shared between you and n number of users. So there is no any guarantees that you will get performance. Shared is more like mean like a little bit more testing. The basic is the first version that can ever be recommended for production. An interesting thing with the basic is that when people are asking like, so how many different API apps should I have or how small the bits can be, the answer is unlimited. So if you want to really split your API, like every API route has a different API app, it might make sense. But it's all about like, of course, if they share lots of code, it doesn't make sense to deploy them multiple times. But if they don't share code, it totally makes sense to create them different projects. Because then you can have a different person maintaining them, different person updating them, and different person like coding at them. So they don't disturb each other. So you can really split it as small packages as you want. The delay caused by having the call to another API app is very minimal. If that becomes your problem, I would really like to see how you're doing your development because you're doing a damn great job if that's your biggest problem. It's that small. Or you're doing something so special that... yeah, I'm totally interested to see what you're doing then, because it needs to be like really real time to make a really big difference. Then about the Logic apps, as we can see, they're a little bit different beast, so they have different limits. Then regarding active mobile devices, what is this limit? When you have a mobile service, the mobile service is built a little bit differently, and it's defined by active mobile devices. But of course, as we go to the basic, when we are in a production, there is no limit again. Then push notification. This is regarding that whenever you get the standard package and you use notification channel, you get 10 million push notifications based on that pricing package. And the broadcast means that how many users at once you can target. So if you define tags like people living in Sweden, people living in Finland, people living in Nordic, and you want to push notifications to those, you can have unlimited amount of those tags and unlimited amount of people inside of those tags. And that's only like, of course, like inside of on a standard and premium on basic. So this is just something that if you're trying on free or shared and you get really weird error messages, it's always good to refer the pricing page. And the limits are always changing, so it's always good to check the pricing page. And I don't think they haven't really like gathered them anywhere else nicely except the pricing page, which is kind of like weird. So there is no like limit page. It's all about the pricing. And then there is logic actions per month. So if you're using logic app and you have some kind of logic there, they are not priced on like how long it takes or any of these kind of things. They are all based on like how many actions you're doing per month. And of course on standard, because you can buy like bigger machines, they are based on the, how many cores you have on that machine. Because I think the largest one is 16 cores. So it's a really huge setup. Now is a great time for any kind of questions. So how does API apps relate to Azure API management?
Either one of them?
No. So Azure API management is a totally different tool. Azure API management is meant more to use as external, but you can totally use it together with this. There is nothing blocking you to use Azure API apps to create APIs and then the Azure API management to manage them. Because if you're like using the Azure API management, product, you can do all kind of like limiting and all this kind of stuff very easily, which if you like just use Azure API apps, you would need to code a lot to enable that functionality. So I think they work really, really well together. Yes?
How does this relate to the ASP.NET Web API?
A lot, I think 90%. So now what's the difference? The default configuration. Basically, the most biggest difference is how they look on the portal and what kind of options you have. There is not that much more different between hosting currently ASP.NET Web API compared to hosting Azure API app. They are very, very similar beasts. But this might change. So this is still like very, very fresh product. And all of the features are still like they're coming. For example, one of the features that like Azure Management API has is like you can create keys to use the API. And you can say that this key, I want to see how many times the API was called with this key. This is very good if you are creating like third party API where you don't know how much they're really using it and you want to build them based on the usage. So on management, Azure Managed API Management Service, you can create keys and measure them, and you can create like throttles that you can only do 1,000 requests or 10,000 requests or these kind of things. So this kind of thing currently doesn't exist on Azure API app, but I would think that it would come soon, and soon is very, very strange variable here. Maybe 3 months, give or take. So I think that in the overall, they will all come together. We're seeing more and more services that will have more features, and they will all come together. But the big question is always like, what is the timeline, and when is this going to happen? Yes?
Can you associate an API app with a virtual network?
Can you associate virtual API app with virtual network? Yes. So you can associate the resource group with the virtual network. And then you can say that only inside of, like, then you can say that it's only internal, and then only people inside of that virtual network can call that API app. Anyone else? Great. So Azure App Service contains web apps, mobile apps, API apps, and logic apps. We didn't talk about logic apps.
My current opinion on this is that don't use it. But my other like opinion is that it will be the greatest thing when it really works. Thank you.